You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast. The Purple Project Podcast is on. Going behind the scenes of Kansas State athletics, from the action on the gridiron to the octagon of doom, and much more. Plus, making rounds about the happenings in the community. Triple P is loud and proud and ready to take charge in the Big 12 Conference. Podcasting to the Little Apple, Kansas City, and the world. It's the Purple Project Podcast. And now, here's your host, Eddie Greer III.
Nation, what's going on, everybody? Another edition of the Purple Project Podcast, Weekly Edition, returns once again, and back-to-back weeks, Eddie Greer here, and we have Kansas, and you know what this podcast is all about, latest in Kansas State athletics. If you're new to the podcast, appreciate you for tuning in. Pretty much with track and field in the books, it is time to look forward to football in here and also get ready for the 2021-22 football season opener. We're going to dive in just a little bit about that. We will dive into the coaching, the position by position, all that throughout the summer. And if anything else breaks outside of football, of course, you can catch the Purple Project Daily Podcast daily for that. Before I bring on my co-host, as usual, you can follow me at Eddie underscore EG3. Wow, I almost messed that up myself. And my co-host will tell where you can follow him in just a moment. And the Purple Project Podcast, find it wherever you get your podcast, whether that's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and more. And folks, this is episode 54 of the weekly edition of the podcast. I'm here in the Little Apple, Manhattan, Kansas. My co-host, Alex Aiden, out there in San Diego, California. Let's go ahead and bring him in. Alex, what's going on?
Not too much, Eddie. I'm sitting here right now watching a little bit of NBA. I got a little bit of NBA playoffs going on in the background. Got a little Royals baseball going on in the background. They're losing. That's pretty normal these days. So, just ready to talk K-State sports. I want to give a shout out, by the way, to the just the K-State track and field team. You know, they wrap things up. All in all, they had a nice season. So definitely want to give them a tip of the cap for what they did. And as you mentioned, Eddie, sports are pretty much wrapped up for K-State. The next thing on tap is getting on the gridiron in late summer, early fall. And so I know that a lot of people are excited for that. And that's probably where we'll be probably spending the majority of our time between now and that kickoff against Stanford. That's 11 a.m. on FS1. So if anyone wants to know more about that, tune into last week's episode. So excited to talk sports with you. And also, Eddie, I haven't given my Twitter handle out forever. You said that, and I thought, man, I used to do that every week on Lock Out World of Sports, and I gained followers. Now I just lose followers, probably because I have just a bunch of bots that follow me. But follow me if you would like on Twitter at AFACHTEN. You can check me out there for all the very hot takes. Some are too hot, to be honest, but that's okay. So you also can check me on my work Twitter at Alex_ITRC. But if you want hot takes, go to the personal Twitter. So I look forward to diving in with you, Eddie.
Yeah, that's right. And I wanted to, speaking of last week's episode, yeah, I wanted to kind of put a bow on that first off. I mentioned last week on the podcast that, you know, with Stanford supposed to be the home opener for here in Manhattan, Kansas, for K-State. Well, usually, at least so far during my time here, my two stints, one in college when I transferred here, and then the other, obviously, moving back to Manhattan, the home opening games had been like 6 o'clock, 7, well, mainly 6 o'clock for the most. So that's a prime time slot, right? So that's another thing. I kind of missed that a little bit, but I just wanted to just throw that out there too, because that's all, that's also September. Things might start to cool off just a bit coming off of summer. And yeah, so I know we discussed that 11 o'clock slot. We're probably going to even talk about it some more. But yeah, that's another opportunity missed there. I understand, you know, the whole pandemic aspect of it, it's a whole money thing. We also talked about that here on this podcast too. But man, I mean, if K-State, Gene Taylor do go 100% capacity, which I'm thinking they will, with fans coming back in the stands and whatnot, and just in speaking of NBA playoffs, it's nice to have that NBA playoff feel with a crowd, actual crowd
involved. Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
Let me tell you.
It's a game changer, man.
Yep, it definitely is. It changes everything, that's for sure. the Hawks last night, coming back from 18. Yeah. That was an amazing performance by Atlanta. Oh, I thought we were done.
That was a must win for the Hawks.
Yep.
That was a must win, but they got it.
We got it. We had to get that game, and we got it. It's a whole new ball game. With that series resuming in Philadelphia tomorrow. So things just got interesting there. And of course, everybody's wondering about Joel Embiid, 0-12. In the second half. Woo! That's rough there. But
that's not good.
Sorry to get off track. But just wanted to bring that up there. The crowd here in Manhattan, Kansas is a game changer. I know it's going to be split, and hopefully K-State can outdo. We can go down and outdo the Stanford fans down there, but just missing it here. It definitely feels like a missed opportunity here. Still, I still feel that way. And I still feel a lot of fans, K-State alumni fans of this football team, this university, shouldn't be going through the same emotions there. So I just wanted to throw that curveball out there a little bit too.
Yeah, no, that makes totally sense. And it's been interesting, Eddie, because I apologize, people. I keep scratching my throat. I just told Eddie this. I sneezed right before the podcast. It just shook up my head of allergies. So I apologize. I'm still regrouping from that. But yeah, it's been interesting, Eddie, because you and I are kind of, I think we understand each other's viewpoint, but I think you and I kind of have a little bit of different take on it, which is cool. When we're talking about it, because we're able to get two different perspectives on the show. And I'll say this: I shouldn't say that we have different perspectives. That's different. I think you and I both see the benefit in both scenarios. With that said, we touched on this a little bit last week, but I think that this game does lose a little bit of the muster, a little bit of kind of that steam, and really a little bit of the, I guess, meaning on why you went down there with the time slot and with the, with it being on FS1, with it being at 11 a.m. Central. In case they got that game, I'm sure that they were expecting something bigger than that. I'm sure that they were expecting a primetime game. I'm sure they were expecting Fox or ESPN or ABC or something along those lines. So, with K-State not getting that, I think that's a little bit of a kind of a blow, because Stanford's not losing anything out of this deal. This is a K-State home game. You mentioned it. They're just along for the ride. So obviously it'll be good for Stanford. I do think it'll be a home game for K-State. I really do. I think that I'm not sure how much Stanford fans will travel. I'm sure that some will travel, but I'm not sure how many will. I really think K-State fans are going to come in droves. I really do. I think that stadium is going to be mostly purple, mostly full, and will be a great environment for K-State. I think it will feel, for the most part, like a home game for them. So, I'm a little less worried about that crowd and that home field. But I also was pretty confident this was going to be a primetime game, and ended up being at 11 a.m. So I say this will probably come, and the stadium will be split 50-50 right down the middle. but no, I really do. I really, you know, we've talked about this before. The K-State has a huge alumni group down in Dallas. It's a easy trek for fans who live in Manhattan, for fans who live in Kansas City, fans who live in Wichita. It's not hard for them to get down to Dallas either. And so I really think that a lot of K-State fans will take advantage of that opportunity. But it's going to be interesting because it just doesn't quite have that same I don't want to see the excitement level dropped, because I don't think the excitement level dropped. I think we're all super pumped about K-State playing Stanford open the season. Not only that's changed, but it's lost a little bit of the juice. It's lost a little bit of the juice, and you're right. You have to wonder, you know, if K-State has that game in Bill Snyder Family Stadium. Typically, they do get that night game to open up the season. You know, would they have gotten that against Stanford if they were there? You know, if K-State did get a night game on or a primetime game on a on Fox or ESPN, would that have outweighed going down to Jerry World and playing in that kickoff classic? So, you know, I think that's a legitimate question. And as you mentioned, Eddie, COVID. Money, that's a big thing. Recruiting, that's another very big thing. And obviously, the money benefits and the recruiting benefits of going down to Texas are just too good to pass up, in my opinion. Even with the 11 a.m. kick, and it's just a good opportunity to get you. I still think K-State will get more exposure on this stage than if they were playing at home as well. So. Those are some things to factor in, but it would have been interesting to see. I still think K-State would have done it if it was not a COVID, if we were not coming off of a COVID season. But with K-State coming off of those COVID season and lost revenue, I think it was probably a no brainer for Gene Taylor. He probably said, "You can't fax me those the paperwork soon enough to get that deal done." So. You know, it is what it is, but it's still a little disappointing, Eddie. It's still a little disappointing that you're playing in that time slot. You just got to make the best of it and understand that, you know, it's still going to be a great opportunity for K-State. Still going to be a lot of exposure, and I still think it's going to be a home game. Jury's still out on that, but I do think it'll still be a home type of game for K-State and a great opportunity. And as we've talked about in the past, and we'll talk about more in the future, tons is on the line in this game. This is not just, you know, some, you know, boring old non-con game. It is a big game for K-State, coming off of five in a row lost to end the season last year. A game against Nevada looming in your non-con schedule, and then possibly the three best teams in the Big 12 to open up the season. So, big game. It is a big game, no matter however you slice it. And, you know, regardless of people think, the game's going to be played there. In case they've got to find a way to win it. So, you know, we'll see if they can do that. But you know, looking forward to that game and what it holds.
Yeah, definitely. And definitely we're going to be saying that a lot. Definitely, you have to get off to a good start. And Alex mentioned that. And probably we'll mention that some more leading up. We have about, 3 months to kick off there. So definitely with, obviously, you have Nevada, the third game down there. We talked about a little bit about the schedule last week on the podcast. So go check that out as well. Get our thoughts on that. Yeah, and Alex, you mentioned the Big 12 and starting off with three of probably the best teams. Top three teams in the Big 12 Conference. Well, they all of them have in common veteran quarterbacks, and that leads me into the Big 12 quarterback discussion. Alright, so I'm going to start, and this is coming off of doing some studying a little bit in the past week. This is coming off one of the articles I've been looking at as far as Big 12 Conference goes for quarterback-wise, right? Okay, so starting at number 10, let's get right down to it, and then obviously I will tell where Skylar Thompson ranks, and then we can get over our thoughts about that. All right, so Myles Kendrick, Jalon Daniels. We saw both of these quarterbacks in the lap of last year going through their struggles last year. They're at the bottom of this list, number 10, obviously. And then you have another quarterback battle at Baylor, Jacob Zeno and Jerry Bohannon. Now, obviously, I never heard of these guys. Obviously, they lose Charlie Brewer, one of the best quarterbacks to ever play at Baylor. So you lose a veteran in that. So that's going to be an interesting situation there. They come in at number 9. Number 8, Texas Tech. They lost Alan Bowman. And right now, from the article I read earlier this week, Tyler Slaw, Texas Tech. I might have butchered his last name, but we're going to roll with that. So, obviously, he's the man that reportedly, or at least article-wise, is going to be replacing Alan Bowman. Alan Bowman, this is kind of a big loss for Texas Tech, Alex. He transferred to Michigan. I had to do a refresher on that. So, woo, big loss for Texas Tech in that one. And their quarterback ranked 8th. Here's kind of where the veterans kind of stack up here, and this is where Max Duggan comes into play at number 7 for TCU, the dual threat quarterback, obviously. He rushed over 100 yards against the Cowboys and Tech last year, and then almost reached the century mark again in the upset win over what was then number 9th ranked Texas as well. But obviously, Max Duggan does struggle throwing the football. K-State intercepted him a couple times last year in that game down there. The defensive game there, which K-State, which we talked about in the post game, just really dominated TCU, especially in the second half. And K-State Nation, Skylar Thompson comes in at number 6. Obviously, coming back for a 6th year of college football, obviously. And obviously, the extra year was granted due to the pandemic, obviously, that we've already have discussed here on Triple P as well. Injuries suffered against Texas Tech there. Obviously, Skylar Thompson, a part of Oklahoma's wins, 2 in a row against OU. Obviously, 72% of his throws in that game. He threw over 331 yards. I had to do a refresher on that as well. He scored four touchdowns, 3 on the ground. And already, K-State fans, you know, Skylar Thompson, what's the word I'm looking for here? Dang it, it'll come back to me. That's for sure. But that's where Skylar Thompson ranks. I got the word now. So we taking Skylar Thompson for granted on his podcast, and it definitely showed. Starting with the debacle of West Virginia, which actually, nice little transition by your truly, Jarrett Diggy, West Virginia. He is number 5 quarterback, and obviously we talked about it a whole lot, and probably Wildcat fans will probably get annoyed at us, maybe more you than me. Neil Brown, doing big things over there. So Deggy at number 5. Oklahoma State returns Spencer Sanders. He sits, according to the article I read, at number 4. And this is going to be year 3 for the Spencer Sanders era. So he's been there quite a bit. Brings that veteran savvy leadership over there, down there at Stillwater. And then this was very interesting. This combination, Alex, was very interesting. Number 3, I have not heard of these quarterbacks for Texas. Obviously, Texas loses Sam Ellinger, long standout for Texas, to the NFL. I don't think Sam Ellinger got drafted. I don't know where he signed or whatever. But hey, anyways, Casey Thompson and Hudson Card right now are going to be doing a quarterback battle at Texas, and that sits at number 3. I will put them, honestly, a little lower because I haven't even seen them taking a snap yet in the college game there. But they're going to be under, obviously, new head coach Steve Sarkisian there. And obviously, number 1 and number 2, you can probably flip-flop these. if you wanted to, but obviously Brock Purdy number two and Spencer Rattler number one, Oklahoma. So I'll kind of circle back the wagons a little bit here, Alex, to your point, the Big 12. K-State's going to have their hands full with Spencer Sanders. Spencer Rattler and Brock Purdy. I think that's the order that they're going to go in. So K-State's going to have their hands full. But Alex, kind of your thoughts on where Skylar Thompson lands on the list, and you have any other thoughts on these on the quarterback combinations?
Yeah, you know, I think that the list, for the most part, I knew exactly what those two were actually talking about, and it was a list that actually feels pretty accurate. You know, a lot of times I look at these lists, I think, okay, like, come on, man, like that's way. There's a stretch here, or there's a stretch there. There's usually a stretch somewhere in the list, and I look at just what I really think. For the most part, yeah, that all looks good. Now, in regards to Texas, I'm with you. If it was up to me, I probably would have put I probably would have put Skylar up at five, and I would have probably put the Texas duo at six, just because of the unknown. I understand that the Texas quarterback duos, when you look at Casey Thompson and Hudson Hard. I know Hudson Hard was one of the top recruits in the 2020 recruiting class, one of the top quarterback recruits. And Casey Thompson played against Colorado in the Alamo Bowl when Sam Ellinger got hurt. And I don't know a ton about him, but he played very well. So looked very good, very good. And I'm sure that whatever happens there, I'm just going to take a guess and say maybe Casey Thompson, because he was the guy that was on the field last, and he's not going to be a freshman Hudson Card. So I would assume that that group may have more talent than what Skylar does, but it's still going to be a young, inexperienced guy, and I think that it makes sense to have Skylar ahead of them. I think you can honestly say the same thing about Max Duggan, too. You know, I know that he was listed low, but it felt a little low for him, too, just because, yeah, he is a little inconsistent throwing the ball, but he's a dangerous quarterback, Eddie. I mean, he's a dangerous guy that can single-handedly change a game, and he's proven that. So injuries are really what got him last year. Injuries kind of threw him off. Injuries are what threw Skylar off, and that's probably why Texas was able to kind of jump up in this list a little bit. But yeah, so I may bump them up a little bit, and I bumped the Texas quarterback trio back. But I understand why, you know, they put the Texas there at number three. Definitely guys with very high ceilings, guys that could be top quarterbacks in the Big 12 for a long time. And so so the list makes sense, and it feels right for the most part. Where Skylar is feels right for the most part to me. I will say this. I think that when you look at what happened last year to K-State, when K-State lost Skylar Thompson, I think it shows just how valuable Skylar Thompson is to this K-State football team. Clearly a very valuable piece of what they do. And you're right, Eddie. I think that a lot of people, myself included, have kind of come to the reality that kind of took Skylar Thompson for granted a little bit and what he could do. Is Skylar Thompson a Colin Klein? No. Is he a Jake Waters? No. Not in my opinion. Is he an L. Roberson or a Michael Bishop? No, although he is going back to Michael Bishop's number, maybe he can recreate some of the Michael Bishop magic. I do like the number change. I like him kind of, and he knows what he's doing. He knows what he's doing. He knows he's number number seven at K-State. He knows.
He better do something good.
He knows. He knows exactly what he's doing, and I like it. I like that. That's why I'm going to have confidence from him. And he knows exactly what shoes he's putting on, and he embraces putting those shoes on. So I love that from a quarterback. But is he those guys? No, he's not those guys. But with that said, is he a great leader? Phenomenal leader. Do the follow his lead? Absolutely, they do. Does he know how to run this offense? Hell yes, he knows how to run this offense. Knows how to run this offense better than anyone on that team, aside from Chris Klein. So, very valuable piece. Very valuable piece to this team. And I think that you can't put enough weight really on that, you know, on that value. In regards to the quarterbacks KC is going to be going up against, it's going to be a tough ball. You know, it's going to be tough. You know, Scott, like you said, you're going to have to go against Spencer Sanders. You're going to have to go up against Spencer Rattler. You're going to have to be going up against Brock Purdy. I mean, that's, you want to talk about a test for the K-State defense to begin Big 12 play. That is a test indeed. Those are probably the three most proven quarterbacks in the Big 12. And you get to go up against them. Bang, bang, bang. 1, 2, 3. Week 1, 2, 3 in the Big 12. So, that's going to be quite the challenge for that K-State defense. But, look, whether K-State's offense has any business competing with those offenses or not, that's a completely different discussion. But Skylar Thompson will welcome the opportunity to try to go toe-to-toe against those quarterbacks and those offenses. So, can K-State do it? Meh. I don't know about that. Will he embrace it, though? F yes, they'll embrace it. And will that make this offense better? Yes, it will, in my opinion. So, definitely look forward to those matchups. There's no doubt about it. Skylar coming back is a game changer for K-State this season, because instead of kind of going into a little bit of a rebuild, K-State really can attack this season and go for an 8-9-1 season if things break right. They really can. And, you know, they just recently added another guy through the transfer portal there on the defensive side as well. And so you can cheer up a few spots. You can get a little older. You've got a quarterback who's been there, done that. You're talking about a good kind of culmination of things there. But getting back to the quarterback list, I think that's the one thing you've got to factor in there with Skylar is what he's done. And what he has done has led K-State to an 8-win season in his first year under Coach Klieman. And then after that, he led K-State to a very good start before he got injured. So he's won. He's won football games. He has been a winner at the quarterback position for K-State. I look for that to continue. I sure hope it continues anyway, because K-State's sure going to need it this year. But definitely eager to see kind of what he can come in there and do. And also eager to really see what the rest of these quarterbacks can do, Eddie, that are on this list. You mentioned some of the questions. Can Max Duggan get more consistent throwing the football? Because if he can, he skyrockets up this list. Can Spencer Sanders take the next step in Oklahoma State? Can he do it without some of those weapons that he's had in years past on that offense? When you look around, can Spencer Rattler really take hold of the top quarterback, really as that top quarterback in the conference, and begin to do things that Kyler Murray did, things that Baker Mayfield did, not comparing him to those two guys, but can he take those types of steps and play up to that caliber of football? You know, these are all good questions. I think that we know we got Brock Purdy. I think we know we've got a really, really good quarterback that's going to play on Sundays for a long time. And he's going to be a headache to deal with when he's out on the football field. You know, what's going to happen? There's a lot of quarterback. There's a lot of quarterback battles going on. You know, you look at Texas. You look at Kansas. You look at Tech. So those are going to be fun to watch. There's a lot of stuff to watch here, Eddie, but at the same time, there's a lot of experienced guys coming back. I felt like we said that last year, too, but we're saying it again. A lot of experienced guys coming back in the Big 12, and it's just going to elevate the level of play. It's just going to elevate it that much more, and I'm excited to see it.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Yeah, it definitely helps when you pretty much got your QB1 back. It also helps that, again, we're going to dive on into all the position players as we move along, not all at once. We're going to take a little bit of a deeper dive into the positions, but tonight we wanted to focus on the quarterback side. for K-State, obviously, going up against Stanford, who also has a good quarterback battle going on in their camp as well. Obviously, there they return 8 starters. Stanford does, anyways. And Davis Mills, the guy that I mentioned last week on True P for Stanford, is now on the Houston Texans. So they have Jack West, a 6'4", 215-pounder there who threw 19 passes last year. And he was pretty solid from what I've read. And then they have a tall, even taller quarterback, Tanner McKee, who is 6'6", 228. And he's a former superstar recruit who spent a few years on a LDS church mission and got his feet wet in the offense last year as well. According to the articles I've read so far on Stanford anyways, McKee has the slight edge going into fall camp there as well. So they have their hands full trying to replace a veteran quarterback there in Davis Mills. Meanwhile, for K-State here in Manhattan, we got our guy back that we've mentioned. And yeah, it's going to be fun to watch. I mean, yeah, last year the quarterbacks in the Big 12 were pretty much all veteran look and does have that same look again. And I forgot about when I'm reading this list over the weekend. Yeah, I forgot about, to be honest, I forgot about Max Duggan and a couple of these other quarterbacks. But the main thing though, the three at the top, Iowa State, both Oklahoma schools have veteran quarterbacks. I definitely did not forget about those. So that's going to be the kicker there for the defense. Obviously, we will talk defense down the road on the podcast here on the Pro Project Podcast, episode 54. Eddie Greer, Alex Andy here with y'all. Getting started with coverage, getting ourselves prepared for the Pac-12 team of Stanford, who played 6 games in the COVID year last year and went 4-2 on the year as well. And they scored, interesting from Stanford's view, their offense scored 24 or more in 5 of those games, actually. So not too shabby, obviously. They returned 8 starters from their ball club. But I mentioned the coaching matchup for this, and this is a good coaching matchup when you look at this, Alex, here, folks.
Yeah.
Obviously, David Shaw, who's been at Stanford for a long time, played as a player and came back to coach alma mater. 90-36 for David Shaw. Pretty successful over there down there in Cali. And then, obviously, in his career in bowls, 5-3. There as well. And then you look at our coach Chris Kleiman going in his third season here in the Little Apple after an 8-4 season first year and losing heartbreaker to Navy. Turn around, you start off 4-1. We all got excited. And then the bottom fell off. Lose 5 in a row. Five in a row, which resulted in a 4-6. And even after that, you want to play in the bowl game. Yeah, I didn't like that, and yeah, glad. I'm glad they did not play the bowl game.
It almost happened, Eddie. It almost happened.
But it didn't.
It was gonna happen. They didn't have that COVID outbreak in the season.
I don't know. Even if they did play the bowl game, I don't know. But bowls, obviously, Chris Kleiman 0-1 since coming here to K-State, obviously. And I know I don't want to jump the gun too much here. I definitely want to get your thoughts on this awesome coaching matchup here of the head coaches here. But I'm just looking at, again, familiarized with the K-State roster and really just focusing on the offensive side of the ball right now, because that's what we're going to be starting off with, obviously, with the quarterbacks tonight. Skyler, obviously, QB1. Will Howard has experience now, which is big for him. He's the backup quarterback. And according to the depth chart I'm looking at right now, heading to fall camp, I mean, it doesn't really matter. But Jaron Lewis, we've talked about him quite a bit here in Triple P. He's the third-string quarterback. And Jake Rubin on this list, obviously, is too fast right now for him. He's got a little work to do So, but yeah, that's, I mean, don't want, again, Alex, don't want to jump the gun on this quarterback battle here. When Skyler leaves, it's going to be really, really interesting here to see who gets QB1 next year. I know that's a year down the road, but yeah, obviously K-State set. And even though if Skyler does, hopefully not, but if Skyler does go down, hopefully Will Howard will be much improved. And we've heard closer sources to the team anyways that Will Howard has improved and got bigger and stronger. We've mentioned that here on a podcast here, but you got three good quarterbacks here on this list, and you got a pretty looking at this offensive depth chart here. Whew, you got a lot of players coming back here, so really no excuse why you can put up at least, and I'm gonna use Stanford's number here, 24 points or more. And I will be disappointed if K-State cannot produce at least 24 points a game. Obviously, last year's debacle, West Virginia, Iowa State, a no-show there. And you get a transfer from USC, the tight end, Daniel Imatabebe. Then that's going to – he's T1 right now, unless overtaking – Nick Leonard and Sammy Wheeler. A lot more on the tight end and wide receiver position in a couple weeks, but I just wanted to slide that one in here. But, you know, let's look at the offense in general. Pretty, you got to get excited. You bring back Noah Johnson, a veteran, to lead that offensive line there. So, but yeah, I mean, looking at this offense, Alex, and the quarterbacks, it's pretty, I mean, from last year's disappointment, you got to expect this offense with your six-year quarterback back, expect more production from that offense.
Yeah, you know, I say let's look at the positives here to start off with the offense, and I'll go to the offensive line. We talked last year about how that offensive line was really a question mark. You know, it was one of the things that we weren't sure if it was going to hold K-State's offense back, and it was really kind of an unknown going in, because K-State was replacing all their entire starting line. And last year, I think that there were a lot of good things that we saw from the young K-State offensive linemen. And so I think that that offensive line that K-State had last year that might have been considered a weakness is going to become a strength of this team.
Yeah,
that's a good thing. That's a good thing for K-State, because football games, as you know, Eddie, you know this as well as anyone, games are won in the trenches. That's where games are won. If K-State can get a hat on a ham and they can make blocks and they can open up holes for Deuce Vaughn, they can give Skylar Thompson time to throw the football or give Skylar Thompson time to run the football, K-State's going to put up points. That's just the truth of the matter. It's going to happen. If they can get time, they've got a sixth-year guy back there who knows what he's doing. He's not afraid of the moment, and he's got one of the best running backs in college football behind him. So if you can give him, and he's got, as you just mentioned, a great tight end option. You know, a lot of us were like, well, what's K-State going to do to replace Bradley Moore? Well, you get an impact transfer at tight end that could potentially have similar types of impact on this team.
Mm-hmm.
This year. So, you know, for K-State, if they can, you know, win in the trenches, that's going to help them. That's going to help them score points. It's going to really get them on the right track because of that experience at quarterback. So, I think the offensive line is one big thing to look at. You know, we'll see if that comes to fruition, but there were a lot of good things, in my opinion, that those guys did, especially later in the season. And not just what they did, they seemed to begin to gel as a group, Eddie. They were playing out of position because of COVID, so they were learning multiple positions, which is making them more versatile. So I think that there's really a lot that you can like there. And I think that Coach Klein would really echo the same thing about that offensive line, you know, saying that that really could be a strength for K-State for years to come. So I think that's going to be an important spot to look. Obviously, we know Deuce Vaughn. There's no surprise there. He's going to be a huge part of the offensive game plan. you've got to be better at utilizing Deuce Vaughn this year than you were last year. No offense to K-State, but Deuce wasn't utilized very well. And he just wasn't. Will Howard didn't really know what to do with him, and that's not necessarily on Will Howard. But it just kind of felt like Deuce was put in positions where he's running in between the tackles. That's not his game. You're not getting him in open space. You're not allowing him to use his speed. K-State couldn't do that enough, you know? He was getting too many touches in between the tackles. He was being missed on too many easy passes. He was really just being under... I'm not going to say he was being underutilized, because I don't think he was being underutilized. I don't think he was being utilized correctly. So I think it's going to be important for K-State to go back to the drawing board and figure out, how can we use Deuce? How can we put him out on the field in a position where he's actually going to be successful? Not where he's running in between the tackles and he's getting banged up for 3 yards. How can we get him in space and let him go? How can we hear Gus Johnson yell, "Deuce is on the loose"? Mm-hmm. How can we do that? How can we get Deuce on the loose? Because that is going to be a huge key for K-State. Because if you can get Deuce going, it's going to loosen everything up. So they've got to get a running back that can run between those tackles. They need someone to step up and be that guy. That just didn't happen last year. I think with an offensive line that's blocking better, that's opening up holes, you may be able to get that. And I'm not saying that Deuce can't run in between the tackles. He obviously can, but you've got to play to his strength. You know, you've got to play to his strength. So I think that's going to be another important thing. And then obviously, you know, you look at it, Eddie, going to wide receiver. I don't think this is a head scratcher, but you got to get more production at wide receiver. You cannot have whatever the hell you want to call it last year that K-State had a receiver. I don't know what it was. They were practically non-existent. So you've got to get production. Malik, I'm sorry. Malik Knoll, it just put up or shut up for Malik. You know, is he going to do it? Can he do it? If he can, if he is, it will be this year. I think it's simple. I really do. Can he make an impact? If he is, he's going to show it this year. If he doesn't show it this year, it's not going to happen. That's just kind of the way I view that. So, can other guys step up? Can you know? Can K-State get production? You know, in the slot, can they get maybe Alex Sebastian Taylor to take the next step? These are going to be things that will be interesting to see, and will really impact what that K-State offense does. It will impact what Skylar Thompson does, and it will impact how many points they put up on the scoreboard. So, you know, these are important questions, and you know, we know that K-State had a bit of a shakeup on the coaching staff. We're talking about coaching a little bit here in particular. You know, you've got a new coach in the receiver room. You know, you've got a new coach in the fullback room. You know, how's that going to change things? You know, how's that going to change the game plan? You know, Corey Messingham's still calling the plays, but how is that going to change things? How's it going to change things to have a six-year starter back behind that offensive line? So, you know, I think that these are going to be things that we're just going to need to watch. But I'm with you, Eddie. You know, K-State, they need to put up more 24 points. They need to do that. Look, we'll just be frank. Just be frank. You know, we'll be frank here. You're going to have to put up points to win the Big 12. We know that. K-State, you can say what you want about, well, you know, K-State Stevens can do this, can do that. You're going to have to put up into at least the mid-20s to be able to compete in the Big 12, let alone against Stanford. So you may as well go out and do it against Stanford. Which, by the way, Stanford, we mentioned it. Stingy, stingy team. Got a stingy defense, and they've got a gritty, gritty team. So, you know, K-State's obviously going to need to match that grit in the game against Stanford. But, look, they're going to need to put up over 24 in practically every game. I mean, that's just the truth of the matter. And if they don't, they're probably going to lose. You know, aside from maybe Southern Illinois, you know, but if you toss that game out, if they can't put up 24 or more, they're probably going to lose, most likely. So, you know, hopefully we can see them you know, come out and execute and use Deuce in the right in the right role, and can use the new tight end as well as the receivers in the right role. And so so that'll be something that will be interesting to watch. And then to finish it off, the coaching. It's going to come down to coaching. It's going to come down to the head coach, Chris Klieman. What can he do? You know, what will he do? You know, he's obviously a defensive-minded guy. But, you know, what will he do about this offense? How can he get it back on the tracks? You know, David Shaw, the head coach of Stanford, hell of a coach. Smart coach. He's got to throw some wrinkles at K-State. How do you combat those wrinkles? Do you have a plan for what he tries to do to stymie you? Because he's going to have a plan. So we'll learn a lot about Coach Klieman probably going up against a guy like David Shaw. But the thing that Coach Klieman, the thing with him is this is nothing new to him. You know, he's gone up against a lot of good coaches in the Big 12, but this will be a challenge. This will be a challenge from a coaching aspect, because David Shaw, he's gonna throw some things at Coach Klieman, and we'll see how he reacts. And well, let's see if Coach Klieman can throw some wrinkles at David Shaw, but they kind of leave him, put him into defensive mode. And Stanford has to kind of shape things up. So I definitely think it's going to be kind of a chess match from a coaching perspective. You mentioned it, very good coaching matchup. It's going to be fun to see those two go at it.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Top of the hour as we're recording this, June 15th, 2021, our Purple Project Podcast, Weekly Edition, episode 54. This episode will come out on Thursday night. Andy Greer, Alex Ames, a couple K-State alums, as well as alums of the student radio station of Wildcat 91.9 on the podcast. And last year, just kind of do a refresher real quick, we did a reaction of all the football games. And we'll do that again this upcoming year. So hopefully a lot more positive things will come out of those other football games, including against Stanford. And I had their schedule up here somewhere. Maybe it's on my next page here. Let me flip it real fast. I might have switched it. Yeah, I did. I switched it. I'll pull it up later. But I know they have, just off of memory, they have Vandy as a non-con game for Stanford anyway. So, yeah, I must have switched it over. But anyways, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. Obviously, we still have ways to go until September 4th. But until that time, yep, it's time to get better for K-State. So the quarterback matchup here, just kind of wrap it up, the QB side of things tonight on this podcast. Next week, we will talk more about Deuce Vaughn. That's interesting. you were not a fan of Deuce Vaughn being used between the tackles and our listeners.
just quickly, it's not that I'm not a fan of him getting used in between the tackles. It's that the number of times we saw him used in between the tackle, because K-State could not get another back to be able to run in between the tackles, was frustrating, because all you're going to do, Eddie, is you're going to get wear and tear on Deuce, and then you're not going to be able to use him in the way that you need to use him, which is in space. And I think going into the season, I said, man, if K-State can use Deuce 12 to 15 times a game, get him 12 to 15 touches a game, yeah, that's perfect for him. Because it's more important to have him over, you know, 3-4 years, however long he's at K-State, than half of a season. And, you know, now knowing what we know of Deuce, he needs more than 12 to 15 touches. That was before we knew that he was going to be what he is. So, obviously, you want to get him more than 12 to 15 touches now. You probably want to get him at least 20 touches. But don't run him. I did not like the way they used him. Eddie, you were correct in that. I thought that he was put in positions where he couldn't use his speed. And he was also put in positions where he was taking some hits. And he was getting banged up. And I think you've got to limit the number of times that Deuce gets hit. And you have got to be able to get him in space, in the open space, so he can utilize that speed. You got to play to his strengths, Eddie. You want to always play to your player's strengths. K-State did not do a good enough job, in my opinion, last year, playing to Deuce's strengths. They got to do a better job of that this year if they want to take a step on offense. I really do believe that.
K-State last year in the conference, Big 12 conference, finished 7th in total offense. They're in 10 games. They're just over 15,000 through the ground, with Deuce Vaughn. I know I'm jumping the gun a little bit. A lot more Deuce Vaughn next week as we focus more on the running backs / fullback going up in this game against that cinchy Stanford defense. They're through the air. K-State, bottom of the list there. 9th, right up next to in front of KU. That's not where you want to be. They're in scoring offense. This is where I want to get to. They were 7th in the Big Conference last year through 10 games there. 33 touchdowns, 12 field goals. There, and they did an extra point try. Oh, and that brings up bad memories. Did a 2-point extra point against Oklahoma State. Not a fan about that. Still not happy about that.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah.
As I'm looking through the stat, 2-point conversion, like, oh, damn. Not happy about that whatsoever there. That was a game that K-State let get away here at home. Or defense side.
Honestly, that could have changed the entire direction of the season. If K-State gets that game, if they can find a way to get that game against Oklahoma State, I think that was after that horrible West Virginia debacle, that could have changed the entire tone of the season. I mean, maybe not, but it definitely could have. Once that game was blown by K-State, that all of the momentum was gone, and K-State couldn't bounce back, and that was the fork. That was the fork in it, but man, that could have changed the tone of the season if they got it. I remember that 2-point conversion too. I totally forgot about it, but yeah, K-State had the perfect play, and I remember Coach Kleiman saying after the game he didn't regret it because he had the perfect play, and he did. I can't remember who was wide open in the corner of the end zone, but
Phillip Brooks was open.
Who was it?
Phillip Brooks.
Phillip Brooks. That's right. It was Phillip Brooks, wide open. Just not a very good throw from Will Howard. Now, should K-State have been putting the ball in Will Howard's hands to throw on a 2-point conversion, that's also a different discussion as well. But I actually remember being fine with the call. I remember thinking, hey, they got the look they wanted, they just didn't execute it. But that clearly affected that game. That has completely changed everything. We may not even be having this conversation right now, Eddie, if K-State wins that game. Because this game may not carry the magnitude that it does. To be 100% honest, this game carries so much magnitude because K-State played so bad those last 5 games of the season. And there's pressure. There's pressure now. Can you snap this losing streak? Is Chris Kleiman for real? Or was that a one-hit wonder? That game could have been a turning point.
Yeah, it could have, but instead, that game seemed to be the dagger of K-State season. And speaking of Will Howard here, Will Howard last year, at least throwing the ball for K-State, finished 9th in the conference, played in 9 games, 8 touchdowns, 10 picks. Threw for 53% of his passes. They were over 1,100 yards passing. They were the long of 70. I believe that was to Brawley Moore. The Baylor game last year. That long there. Average 130 yards per game, obviously. We got our QB1 back, so we'll see. Obviously, that's going to be a huge difference there, but I just want to recap Will Howard's numbers right there. I finished 9th. Right there in front of him, Max Duggan and Jalon Daniels and Miles Kendrick of KU. So that's where a K-State quarterback play was last year after Skylar's injury went down.
Yep, exactly. You know, you've also got to wonder, and this is in the back of every K-State fan's mind, and we've all thought it, and we've even talked about it a little bit in the show, but man, what would the season have looked like if Skylar never got hurt? I mean, I'm definitely not trying to sidetrack the conversation, but you just have to kind of wonder, Eddie, you know, really, you talk about what the conversation would be like, you know, had that Oklahoma State game gone differently. Man, I mean, if you keep Skylar in there, does K-State crumble at all the way that they did? And I would assume to a degree, maybe, because the schedule got more difficult on the back half, but man, you could be looking at 6-4 instead of a 4-6, and we could be sitting here saying, yeah, you know, it's a tough schedule. K-State, you know, they were able to grind it out, and, you know, we'll see what happens this year, but, you know, we're not having that conversation because he got hurt, but you really do have to wonder that, and you could say that for other teams, too. You know, you could say that for other teams, too. You talk about TCU, you know, if Matt Duggan stays healthy all year, you know, what does TCU look like? You know, would they have looked any different? You know, would K-State's game against TCU have looked any different? Interesting. But it's an interesting thought. It's an interesting thought to kind of just think what the season for K-State may have looked like if Skylar Thompson stayed healthy. And, you know, we'll never know the answer to that. But you really have to wonder. And I'm sure that Coach Klieman is wondered that exact same thought. He's probably gone to sleep thinking about that before. So, although I think it could end up being a blessing in disguise because, you know, Will Howard was kind of thrown in the fire, and I think that there's potential there. But man, what if? You know, that's my go-to saying, Eddie, is what if? And I'm just curious. I'm curious if Skylar Thompson doesn't get hurt. What happens last year? I also wonder if he doesn't get hurt. Does he come back this year? He may not. He may not. But I think his biggest reason for coming back might have been that injury. So it could end up being a blessing in disguise for K-State. So, you know, who the heck knows? But it's an interesting thought.
Yep, definitely. Yeah, Skylar. Yeah, we kind of talked about that last year on a podcast too. Yeah, if Skylar doesn't get hurt, you know, he might be pursuing another career, and some people say he could come back to do like a coach, be a coach for K-State, but
yeah,
that's what I've read, that's what I've heard, but yeah, that's
a line wrap.
Yeah, that's so, but hey, we got back on the football field for six, and definitely most likely his final year, so it could be a blessing in disguise for this offense that has, I mean, when we look at all the names on a depth chart, we'll continue to talk about Deuce Vaughn next week in the running back position, which is still loaded. this offense needs to take a next step. There's no question about it. The play calling needs to be better. That's for damn sure about that. So
it was so predictable.
Yep.
I mean, I'm not going to go on a tangent, Eddie, but it was just too predictable. You can't have your offense be so predictable. I mean, you just can't do it, you know. You can't just be, you know, run left, run right, you know, Will Howard screen, bubble screen to the receiver. I mean, you've got to be more creative offensively. I mean, K-State has got to do a better job of that.
Yep, so definitely a long way, still ways to go since September, but these are the questions we're going to be asking right up to that game and more. So you can only wonder, you know, what will happen with that Courtney Messingham offense. But you have a veteran quarterback back. You have your QB1 back wearing that number 7, Skylar Thompson. He knows what he's going to get himself into. So it definitely, hopefully it will be the difference. And obviously, yeah, before we kind of go ahead and wrap the episode, begin to wrap the episode up here, obviously, I have not seen Sam McCartney, the new quarterbacks, just by reading the new quarterbacks for Stanford. Obviously, I mentioned them a little bit with West and McKee there. And then going up against Skylar Thompson and Will Howard there, obviously, I'd be a fool to pick Stanford in this section here, but I'm going to obviously go K-State here with a big plus getting Skyle Thompson back. And you have an experienced quarterback now with Will Howard, with all that experience and learning, going through a lot of hardship last year. So, obviously, I'm going to give the edge here, the K-State, obviously, here. Obviously, not seeing one of those two quarterbacks, either of those quarterbacks for the Cardinal there and in on that front there. So, at least in the quarterback side, definitely I will give the edge to K-State. Alex, what about you, sir? What do you think?
Yeah, they're honestly really not even a thought in my mind about that. Yeah, it's pretty easy for me. And you know, I don't know how many games this year we will be. I apologize. Ella is just going, and she just started attacking my bed out of nowhere, just like full fledged attack. yes, thank you, Ella, for distracting me. I totally lost my train of thought because of your attack on my bed. Who are we talking about? Oh my gosh. There we go. It's coming back. I apologize. That was very distracting that she was she's still doing. Would you get off of my bed? Thank you. Okay. Anyway. Hey, look, this is all you get. This is what you get from podcasts at home, you know? It's just this is the world. But yeah, this is Skyle Thompson. You know, it's an easy call for me. I don't know how many times we'll be picking Skyler over a quarterback this year. I really don't. You know, when we're picking quarterbacks head to head, but in this one, you're looking at Skyler, you know, 6-year starter, got a huge chip on his shoulder, points to prove. Let's also not forget that we got hurt in a cheap shot last year as well.
Yeah, I remember that. Yep.
Yeah, you can't tell me that that's not in the back of his head a little bit too. And, you know, you're looking at Stanford, they're going to be throwing a new quarterback out there. You know, it could be Tanner McKee. It could be Jack West. It looks like Tanner McKee might have the inside track based on kind of what happened in the spring. But, you know, it's still too early to say. So, but whoever takes the field for Stanford, or maybe even both of them, I definitely give Skyler the edge there. Because Skyler's got the experience, and I think Skyler's got the skill set to out-duel those two guys. Could be wrong. But also, if you just kind of look back at Stanford and kind of what they've been, the system that they run, and the role the quarterback plays in it, that's never been a position that Stanford has been, outside of Andrew Luck, obviously. it's not a position that they've, you know, it's been like a juggernaut. You know, usually it's other things on that football team, whether it's a good offensive line, whether it's a good running back, i.e. Christian McCaffrey, whether it's a stingy defense that wins football games for Stanford. So, you know, I think that I just don't think it's even really a, you know, competition there. I mean, I shouldn't say competition. That's not the right word. But I don't even think there's an argument there to be had. I think that you give that to Skyler all day. It's a matchup that, you know, I think K-State's defense has a good opportunity to be able to have a good game to start the season against against a new quarterback, making their first start in a hostile environment, hopefully, and against a good football team. So I think it's a good opportunity for K-State's defense. And, you know, for Skyler Thompson, I think that he's going to have opportunities as well. Stanford is a gritty team. They got a good defense, but I think the opportunities will be there for him. So, you know, for me, give me Skyler. Give me Skyler all day, ride or die with him. Ride or die with the Michael Bishop clone, as he is trying to go for this year, and see what happens.
Listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
So that's K-State Nation, Eddie Greer, Alex in Triple P Weekly Edition. Continues coming to a close, episode 54, our first look at the opening game down in Arlington, the All-State Kickoff Classic, September 4th, when K-State goes to Arlington to take on a Stanford Cardinal there. First inside look at the teams there, obviously. Tonight, this episode, we covered a quarterback play of both teams, obviously. More on K-State anyways. And then next week, Alex mentioned, we talked a little bit about Deuce Vaughn, and that will continue right on into next week as we will talk running backs there. Obviously, Joe Irvin returns, so I'm going to save my take on that there. So a lot of talent on the backside for the backs, and of course, fullback also returning there as well here. As I switch my screen again, I don't have K-State's depth chart, at least for the moment, pulled up. So that's off of memory. So running backs next week on the podcast with more Deuce Vaughn talk next week. He was Mr. Everything for the Wildcats there when after Skylar Thompson went down last year. So definitely, Vaughn definitely one of the top five backs coming back in college football. That is for sure. Meanwhile, at the recording of the towards the end of this podcast, obviously this will be out on Thursday night. So obviously Brooklyn and Milwaukee, I think it's going to be playing Game 6 by the time this podcast comes out. But Kevin Durant dropped 49 on the Bucks tonight, and the Nets get a game closer. There we go. Get a game closer. They go up in the series 3-2 after losing Kyrie Irving. Apparently, James Harden came back there after a lot of people thought he was out for this game. And that was huge for them, even though point-wise he wasn't productive. But just having the on-court presence there for Brooklyn there was huge for that team, because that Brooklyn, I thought they were in trouble not having at least another star with Durant. But Kevin Durant, 49. Jeff Green came back.
I was about to say Jeff Green, 27.
27 there.
How about that? Woo! What appearance.
Huge there. Jeff Green came back in Game 4. Returned to the Brooklyn Nets in Game 4 of that series there. So the home team in this series has won all the games to this point. So Brooklyn will have to go on the road to Milwaukee.
What a missed opportunity, by the way, for the Bucks, Eddie.
I was about to say that. Yep.
16 points at halftime. They're up by 16. And they get outscored by 10 in the third and 12 in the fourth. And give up a combined 71 points in the second half. Man alive. That is a blown on the road. You got a chance to go up 3-2 and then go home. With Kevin Durant, with James Harden, yeah, he's in there, but he's still
he's a little shaky, yeah.
Yeah, that hurts. I really thought the Bucks had this series, especially when I was watching the first half of that game. So that man, the pressure shifted to Giannis.
Ooh, yeah, they Milwaukee loses the series. Yeah, I can circle back to this game right here. Up that much points, that's almost like a 76ers last night there. They did not have the knockout. They did not get the knockout punch on the Hawks there, and the Hawks clawed their way back in. A huge third quarter really set them up there. And then obviously Embiid struggled through the second half there. But yeah, the 76 kind of reminded me a little bit about the 76ers game last night there.
Good comparison, yeah. No doubt. Definitely similar.
Philadelphia could not put the knockout punch on us there. And the Hawks battle back to tie that series up. It's getting very interesting with that series, as I mentioned at the top of the podcast tonight. Sorry, folks, about that. But hey, I mean.
Hey, look, that's what's going on right now, Eddie. That's what's going on, yep. NBA playoffs. And you got a team in the fight.
I got a team still left in the dogfight here, and we'll see what happens tomorrow night there, obviously. Gotta go back to Philly and try to get this game. I think this is a pivotal game for the Hawks to have, and we can get this game. Things get really interesting, but I don't want to look too far ahead, but Game 5, huge for the Hawks tomorrow night, and the Bucks give one away to the Nets after jumping all over them in the first half. Giannis had 34, Chris Middleton 25, Holiday had 19. You don't get really much off the bench. You only get 15 off the bench for the Bucks in this game. And Jeff Green, 27, and he had Shamet had 9, so those two alone outscored.
That's it. That's what did it. It was Kevin Durant and Jeff Green, and that's it. I mean, the little Blake Griffin. Blake Griffin did have 17.
Yeah, Blake Griffin's been big.
Literally,
yeah.
The Nets scored 114 points and had three players in double figures. Three.
Oh, yeah.
That's
three.
Insane. I cannot tell you how much of a blown opportunity that is for the Bucks.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Yeah. I wouldn't be in the head coach Mike Budenholzer's shoes right now.
No, I would not want to be in them, especially after seeing what happened to Terry in Portland. You better believe that that'll make other teams think, well, are we holding on to a coach here too long? There's no doubt he's on the hot seat.
Yep. There's going to be questions going into tomorrow until the next game. That is for sure. So we'll see if Brooklyn, who had a chance in game three to win that game, kind of made a mental mistake late. Can't remember what the player was who made that mistake, but yeah, made a mental mistake there, and Milwaukee snuck out at home with that one. So now Brooklyn up 3-2. We'll see if Brooklyn, the road team, can close Milwaukee out in that series there. We know Phoenix swept Denver 4-0 there, and the inconsistent Clippers. Okay, you go down 2-0 in the first series, you to Dallas there, and then eventually you claw your way into Game 7 there. You fight back through that, and then the Clippers fall behind 2-0 against the Utah Jazz. There, and then all of a sudden the Clippers turn it on in the next two. So I don't know which Clippers team is going to show up for this one. That game, this series is tied 2-2, and we've already covered the two Eastern Conference series there. So any last thoughts on the NBA on your thoughts on the NBA playoffs so far?
Yeah, well, I will say that I keep sitting there thinking the Clippers will win that series, but then Utah gets up 2-0. I'm like, well, I mean, Utah's a hell of a team. They've had a hell of a year, and so, you know, maybe they're just going to find a way to get this out and get this series. They've gone up 2-0, and then, lo and behold, Ty Lue, who's the most calm coach that is losing in a series I've ever seen, there they come, you know, winning two in a row there, and now series tied at 2. So, you know, who the heck knows what'll happen in that series. That's a great series out there between the Clippers and the Jazz. That is more of like a Western Conference Finals type of series instead of Western Conference Semifinals type of series. So we're definitely getting a treat with that one. And then you obviously flip it over. Suns are, you know, they're going to the finals at that. Their series with the Nuggets already done. They're clearly the better team. And really made my Blazers just look that much more pathetic. They play against the Nuggets. I think we really touched on it. It'll be interesting. It'll be interesting in the East to see if the Bucks can come back and force a Game 7. Look, I still don't think Kyrie's going to be available. So, you know, if you're just getting a shell of James Harden and you're getting KD, the Bucks should believe they've got a shot, because I do think they're the better team. I really do in that scenario. So it'll be interesting to see if they can go get the win at home on Game 6 to force that Game 7. And then, as you mentioned, another great series with the Hawks and the Sixers. And now you find the Sixers kind of in a similar position to the Bucks, where they've got a chance to go get a 3-2 and have a chance to go home and win 6 if they can get that win. And it's not a must win in my opinion for Atlanta, because if they don't get that game, they got the chance to go back home and try to get that series even and get it to a Game 7. And when you get to a Game 7, anything's possible at that point. But Atlanta definitely has a chance to put themselves in a good position, put it that way, if they can get that one. So we've got three good series left, and it'll be interesting to see what happens. And I really don't know what will happen, Eddie. I really don't. It feels pretty wide open.
So we'll see what happens moving forward into the rest of the week on how these NBA, these three playoff series, how they end up, folks. Eddie Gerd, Alex Zane, the Pro Project Podcast coming to a close tonight, getting ourselves bit by bit, getting ourselves prepared for the Stanford Cardinal down in Jerry World, September 4th. Alex, last words before we close out.
You know, Eddie, I just hope that people have a great rest of the week. You know, we're now here into mid-June, as we touched on earlier in the podcast. K-State sports have wrapped up. Spring is wrapped up. It's done. No more baseball. No more track. No more any of that. No more debating whether the baseball team should be playing. Although, I will say, the College World Series is now approaching. So if people want to go check that out, go ahead and take a look. Take a look there. I can't recall if any Big 12 teams made it to the College World Series or not. I don't think so. I know that the Big 12 had some teams make Super Regionals. I know Texas Tech made one. Pretty sure Texas made one as well. I feel like it could be wrong. I feel like maybe a Big 12 team actually did make the College World Series. I can't remember now. But either way, point being is this: it is going on, and people should check it out. It's some good baseball. And you mentioned the women's series on the women's softball World Series or championship. Not exactly sure what they call it. But that was good. That was good. A good watch. And so I'm assuming that this will be a good watch as well. And, you know, now we've got an opportunity to see. Of course, I can't. It was a Stanford, NC State, Vanderbilt, Arizona, Tennessee, Virginia, Mississippi State, and Texas. Okay, I was right. Okay, so Texas did make it. So one Big 12 team. There you go. One Big 12 team in the College World Series. So that is still going on. But look. For K-State, it's football. You know, that's now where the focus is. That's what's next on tap for the boys in purple and that's just boys and girls, I should say, in purple. And we're excited for that to come along. You know, it'll be, believe it or not, it'll be right around the corner. You know, we're already in mid June, which is just insane to even think about because it still feels like it's May to me. Next month, training camps are going to begin in the NFL, and then you roll right around the beginning of August, and it's going to be the summer camps for college, and next thing you know, it's time to play. It's time to play ball on September 4th, and we're turning on the TV, and it's time for Stanford, so it'll come quicker than I think that we're expecting it, but it's going to be fun to be able to break this down. You know, as summer comes, it's a good opportunity for us to be able to kind of dive into the nitty gritty. So I just hope people continue to tune in, and because you know we're going to keep cranking out some good content to really look forward to this football season. Because it's time to dial in. I'm definitely enjoying the baseball, but I'm ready for football and definitely beginning to feel the itch.
Yeah, definitely. That's for sure. Definitely excited to dive in more into this K-State roster for this year and continue to talk more about Stanford. Obviously, we're going to get our schedule predictions a little bit more closer to September 4th, so we're going to have that as well. So, very excited. Football just taught me talking football again, my friend. Well, Stan Storm is playing. Time to wrap things up. And before I do that real quick, big Father's Day weekend. Everybody, shout out.
Yes.
Father's Day weekend this weekend.
Happy Father's Day to you, man.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much, Alex. Yes.
Yes.
Happy Father's Day to all the K-State dads and other dads out there who will be celebrating this weekend. Well, running backs. K-State running backs next week led by Deuteron. We'll talk more about that on the next edition of the Pro Project Podcast. But for right now, Triple P. Another episode in the books, episode 54, comes out Thursday. My co-host Alex Aiden, Eddie Greer here in Manhattan, Alex in San Diego. Thank you for listening to another edition of the Purple Project Podcast. Alex will do it again next week. Go Cats!
I look forward to it.
To you on the next edition of the Purple Project Podcast.